from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel. Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
The 2-1. Swinging a drive toward deep left center field. Back goes Pache at the wall. Gone! Not going. Here's a swing and a drive deep left center field. I think he's done it again. Another home run for Suzuki. Left center gone by plenty. Cubs lead 3-0. It's the Seiya show here in South Florida.
Yeah, I mean, a whole bunch of big swings from Seiya. Got us a lead early, which is always great. And I think Given just showed us some room, is always helpful for the starting pitcher, and Seiya was the guy kind of leading the charge there.
Number 30 in hard hit rate in all of baseball is Seiya Suzuki. He's behind one Cub player in hard hit rate. Let's ask our next guest if he can guess who it is. Sahadev Sharma from The Athletic joins the Score Hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Sahadev, who's the one Cub ahead of Seiya Suzuki in hard hit rate, sir?
Would it be someone that's eligible, or are we just saying in general?
No, it's somebody that's eligible here in 2024. Aaron Judge is number one. Kyle Schwarber is number two. I've heard of him. Gunnar Henderson is 3. Seiya is 30. One Cub is number 24 in hard hit rate.
Is it Hap?
It is at 38.6%. I wouldn't have guessed that myself, but I guess we got to look at Ian Hap's season. Even with the slow patches that were there, he keeps hitting bombs from each side of the plate, and I think he's top six in walks in MLB. This is going to end up being a very solid offensive season for him.
Yeah, and I remember talking to him early in the season. He hit a home run and. We kind of joked. He's like, yeah, finally hit a ball hard. So he wasn't hitting the ball hard like that first month or so of the season. But yeah, no, he definitely is someone that has solid exit velocities and obviously has turned his season around. I get fans get frustrated with Ian Happ at times or don't see his full value, but he's as consistent as they come. He went from one of those up and down, very streaky guys to he's just going to put up a 120, 125 weighted runs created plus every year now, it seems like.
So it's what's crazy is, like, look, early in the year, I was bemoaning, during the course of the season, I was like, man, they're locked in with that Hap contract in left and that Seiya contract in right, and I don't see how they're going to get better or let some of their young kids play. I don't see where the spots are, like, in terms of rebuilding the core for next year. And it's... But then here we are, and those two guys are not the problem. So, I want to talk about right now and the chances for what they can do. But since we started here, where is the spot to upgrade for next year? Is Miguel Amaya and Moises Ballesteros, is that your catcher tandem next year? Like, I don't know where they're going to upgrade.
I don't think they start the season with Moises Ballesteros in the big leagues. I think they want him as depth and maybe many of those guys that are at AAA. That's depth come next season. But what Miguel Amaya has done to turn his season around is impressive. That's hard to do. It's hard to be in the depths like that and almost lost at the plate and fix things in the middle of the season. So he gets a ton of credit for that. I just don't know if he does this for another month, then does it start changing minds in the front office? Perhaps, but it has to be really impressive down the stretch for them to really shift gears here, because that is a priority for them, upgrading a catcher. I think that's one of the main things. And then you just kind of look around and say, where else can you upgrade, right? Offensively, is it possible to move guys and shift guys around? Do you want to make a big trade? I think a big trade is very possible. Who they get back in that trade, it's hard to say right now. But they have a ton of minor league depth. They have pieces that they could, switch out in a way. And I think the most obvious way to upgrade offensively is catcher, but I don't want to discount what Miguel Amaya has done this past month or so.
Well, you've got me thinking about that big trade. I mean, are we talking about guys in the final year or two of their deal? Vlad Guerrero Jr. at first base, that kind of thing?
I mean, Vlad Jr. certainly makes sense, but I think Toronto has to shift gears. Toronto, they're in a similar situation as the Cubs, right, where disappointing season. Front office kind of has had a long rope here, and my guess is they have to look in. That front office is kind of going to be looking in like, we have to do stuff to win now. I don't know if trading Vlad Jr. is the way to do that, though. I mean, he's really turned it on, right? He's an obvious superstar. I think it'd be hard to. I mean, what are you doing with Michael Busch then? Michael Busch is an elite defender at first base. I was just looking this up. I think he has the fourth highest weighted runs created plus for any first baseman, any regular first baseman. He's right behind the superstar first baseman, right? It's the superstar tier of like Freddie Freeman, Bryce Harper, and who's it, Vlad? And then it's Michael Busch, you know? So I don't know if that's the spot you want to you upgrade, but like getting Vlad Jr. is obviously an upgrade. I just don't know if he'll be available. I think it's hard to know who that is. Maybe free agent wise, they go after Anthony Santander. I think that makes a ton of sense, especially if Cody Bellinger opts out. I think I just don't know what the price is. And those things are hard to know right now until the season's over. Santander is kind of in a hot stretch too. So his price may keep going up.
Yeah. Santander, right now, it was 38 home runs for Anthony Santander and 86 ribs and 825 OPS. Man, his timing is free agency very well. So Hadif Sharma with us here on The Athletic. Hey, listen to this from Craig Counsell about Pete Crow Armstrong with me the other day in the Score Afternoon Show. And I want to, I'd love to get your thoughts on it. Maybe you've had conversation with him on air or on the record or off the record that can amplify it. This was Counsell talking about PCA's unique skill set and what they're asking him or not asking him to do at the plate.
The blessing and the curse for Pete is that he is uber talented, and that makes people think he can do everything, or just be great at one thing, right? And like development, some of development is just, it's a little bit organic. Like it's, he goes and we're going to like learn things about Pete, and he's going to learn things about himself. And we'll kind of like put some guardrails on him and steer him in the right direction. But while he's capable of doing everything, like why not shoot for that? We should shoot for that. Absolutely. And so I think Pete is capable of that. We want it now. Pete wants it now. It's hard, a little harder than that. But he's making progress, and that's the main, and he's making progress really in all areas to me. And that's the positive thing.
So that resonated with me, Sahadev. While he's still showing he's capable of everything, let him do everything. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, people see a fast guy, don't try and hit for power, right? Like right. This guy's super fast. Don't just put the ball on the ground and run, go the other way. Sure, okay, if that's what it comes down to, if that's who he is. But he has a lot of power in there. I mean, we've seen that over the past, month, right? I mean, he's hitting for power. Do you want him to take walks? Sure, but you want that to happen organically. You don't want him up there passive and saying, like, I'm taking a walk. You don't want that for anyone. Nobody goes up there. Nobody should be going up there and saying, I'm taking a walk. That's my goal. If that happens, and great. Like, if he becomes a great on-base guy, that's awesome for him. What has stood out to me is there's a couple things. First of all, it's how bad he looked up until Kansas City, and it just was like a 180 flip. Uh, I I was kind of taken aback by it, because it was like, okay, this may just be like a take your lumps year for him offensively, that maybe that's just what it is. But he looks like a completely different player. He was chasing every slider that was thrown down and into him. It was like automatic swing. Mm. Suddenly the pitch recognition has completely shifted. It was something that stood out to me that Council said. It was one of those moments where you're half paying attention in pregame and kind of going through your, like, thinking about things. And then all of a sudden he said, he was talking about his prep, PCA's prep before the game. And he said, that's something that he didn't expect to get to this point, how quickly he's gotten. I'm sure you've talked to guys about this over the years, Speaks, but prep is one of those things that I don't think we realize how important it is for players. Get in your routine, have a normal daily prep that gets you ready for the game, and that sets you up for success. You repeat that day after day after day. Paul Konerko, I remember talking to him early in my career as a reporter, and it's standing out to me how he said that basically changed how he was as a player. He went from this super inconsistent guy to this really consistent offensive performer because he figured out, he's like, oh, prep is something that the greats do. They have their routine, they stick to it, and they don't mess around with it. They find out what works for them, and it allows them to thrive, because it's so hard to get through a 162-game season. And when you have this routine, when you stick to it, and you know what you're doing every day, it just gets you ready. It's just, it works for a lot of people just in life, right?
Yes, yes.
And I think Council pointing that out and saying how he was kind of like surprised, I did not think it would happen this fast, shows a lot of maturity for me, for PCA. Like, he's figured some things out. He knows what he wants to do before a game to get himself prepared. And now he's gotten there. He's putting in the work. Watching him play like this has to be exciting for fans. He's at like a 83 weighted runs created plus, something like that, maybe 82. If he ends the season at like 90 for a full season, that's really valuable for him.
Man.
If he's a 110 guy, that's an all-star. If he's a 120 guy, that's a guy that's getting MVP votes, because he's an elite defender, or he's borderline elite defender, right? He's still got some room to grow. He'll learn as he goes out there, but he's a great defender, and then he could be elite out there. I don't think he's a far away from that.
That's a great bit of conversation from Zahadev Sharma on Pete Crow Armstrong, including the numbers, so you understand what the context could be, but the human side of prep. Yeah, Konerko holds a place for all of us who got a chance to cover him or deal with him. I brought him up to Ian Happ the other day in terms of like somebody that Ian sort of reminds me of in terms of that work ethic, that consistency, and that ability to talk about stuff. You know, it's a pretty damn good dude to aspire to in terms of work habits and everything like that. Let me shift gears while we can, Zahadev. The remaking of the bullpen, on the fly, am I gleaning too much from it to say that it bodes well for the partnership of Jed Hoyer and Craig Council moving forward? Because I feel like there's a mix of giving the right roles to people and going out and grabbing guys off the scrap heap, but also like understanding what you have and utilizing them correctly. It feels like sort of a model of how you dream of them working together well.
Yeah, well, I think it kind of shows like how willing Craig Council is to adjust, because just talking to him, it's not like he was like, oh yeah, Porter Hodges is ready, he's gonna dominate. No, he was like, I'm not sure if he's ready. I'm not sure if he, like, what he can do. Like, let's see what he can do. And then he showed him what he could do, and he quickly moved him into high leverage spots, right? Tyson Miller, this is just a small trade, you know? Who knows? He was DFA'd. Is this guy really good? Okay, you show me he's really good, I'm going to pitch him in these moments. If the guy gets on base, I'm calling to Tyson Miller. Like, in a big situation, that's who I'm going to. Jorge Lopez, I think we've known that he's a talented guy. A lot of things going on off the field for him before this. He had a bit of a tough situation in New York where, you know, the moment got to him, and I think he reacted poorly, and he admitted that. He's in a comfortable situation. Council knows him. Darren Holmes knows him. I think he has history with some other people around the Cubs organization. He feels comfortable now. they found some things that very minor tweaks that they were able to take advantage of. And he went from, it's like, he's dominant. Like I watched some of his outings and I was like, what? Like, this guy was available for nothing.
Yeah.
He is utterly dominant out there. I mean, that's just three guys who, you did not go into the season. They weren't on anyone's radar. Well, two of them weren't on the team in the organization, and Porter Hodge. Yeah. I remember he stood out to me stuff wise in spring training, and I've heard enough about him that I knew he was a talented arm, but it's like, how many guys like that have we talked about in the past 2 years? Talented arm, and then they come up and they can't find the zone, or they get hit hard when they do find the zone. Hodge has figured it out. He knows what to do. All he needed to do was be a little bit around the zone. Stop throwing these, non-competitive pitches. He's pretty much eliminated that. Yeah, are the walks a little high? Sure. But when you strike out over 30% of the batters you face, you're going to have success. So it's been impressive to see the turnaround. I do believe Craig Counsell knows. Like, I like the fact that he's like, okay, this guy can do it. I'm going to push him. I'm pushing him, especially when he doesn't have other guys yet. Like, you know, the bullpen didn't develop the way they had hoped with injuries and ineffectiveness. It just didn't work early on. And Hoyer has had a history in his front offices of grabbing guys that have talent and may be coming off some, you know, rough season or a rough patch, and this coaching staff manages to get more out of them or get them back to who they were at their best. I think that's, you know, you got to give them credit for that. They've done a good job of putting this bullpen back together over the course of the season, and it's gone from like, oof, how are they going to fix this, to wow, is this one of the better bullpens in baseball? And this happens. Go look at what the Diamondbacks did last year. Their bullpen wasn't a dominant force in April and May, and then turned into one, picking guys up off the scrap heap, calling guys up from the minors.
Yep.
And you turn into a really good bullpen. And bullpens, like, that's why when they're going to be fans, people listening right now that say you have to go out and spend big on a reliever, go look at the best bullpens in baseball. Go look at the best relievers in baseball. The very few, like three of them, have big contracts. The rest are like people you probably haven't heard of, or guys that have had bounce back years, or whatever it may be. That's just how bullpens are.
Yeah,
it's really hard to predict it.
They're really weird, and every organization is looking for talented arms that they can do something to. Like the Padres took Jeremiah Estrada from the Cubs, taught him a splitter. Right. You know, it's like, so everybody's doing this with each other. And if the Cubs, are one of those teams that can, then you bank on that and you enjoy it. All right, last thing, Sahadev. 9 games left for the Cubs against teams that are currently in the playoff mix. Every other team that they're chasing has way, way, way more than that. The Braves I think the Braves play 14 games, 17 games against teams in the playoff mix. The Mets play 19 games against teams in the playoff mix. The Giants play 24 games against teams in the playoff mix. Just this week, the Braves go to Minnesota, then they go to Philly for 7 games total, and the Cubs have more. I mean, where are you 1 to 10 on a belief that they can catch those three teams, including the Braves, who they have to catch?
Yeah, I think it's going to be tough. Like, I'm not worried when I come. If you want to say, like, do I think the Cubs are going to get as many wins as last year? Yeah, I think they are going to end up around that win total. I think they probably have to end up with more. My concern is they've dug themselves too big a hole. Am I ruling it out? Am I saying no chance? No. Like, we've seen great Septembers, especially from council-led teams, that can lead to funky things happening. And Atlanta is beat up enough that it could happen. So I'm not ruling it out. Atlanta's just playing really well right now, and they keep winning series after series. Obviously, the Cubs need to start sweeping some series here. If they can chip away at this lead, and we're, you know, a week from now, they're looking at something like 3 or under 3, that'd be ideal, right? You need to start chipping away. It's that sweep to Cleveland hurt a lot.
Yep.
I know Cleveland's a great team, but still, you needed to win one of those just to feel a little bit better about things. I don't feel great just yet, but I'm not ruling it out because of their schedule. It is so, and they're playing much better baseball. Part of it is because of the schedule, but also, like, they're just looking like a better team, a more comfortable team. And like we talked about, the bullpen, the offense is finally coming around. So yeah, I think there's a chance. We're saying 1 to 10. I'm going a little bit below 5. I'm going to go 4 just because I'm not there yet. It can shift quickly in a week. It really can.
Understood. 92.4% chance to make the playoffs last year on September 6th. So a 7.6% chance would be the inverse on September 6th. So
all right. There you go.
So why not, right? All right. So Hadif, thanks, man. Appreciate you. Have a wonderful day. A wonderful Sunday.
You too. Thanks so much for having me.
You got it, man.
Take care.
You got it. So Hadif Sharma from The Athletic. It's tricky. A couple of things left to get to before the top of the hour when the Cubs and the Marlins will be hitting your ears right here on 670 The Score. By the way, Bernstein, Holmes, and Rahimi will be live from the Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern in Wrigleyville from 10 to 2 on Tuesday, September 17th, where they will be joined on site by Cubs pitcher Justin Steele. And be listening to Mully and Haw and Bernstein and Holmes this week for your chance to win tickets to watch the show while enjoying a complimentary buffet provided by Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern. It is all brought to you by Bosch Power Tools and Phillips Chevrolet. Reminder that breaking news on 670 The Score is presented by BetQL. Smarter bets start with BetQL. Download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today. The biggest money guy on the Cubs starting to play awfully well. You hear his voice next right here on The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Dansby's been, we're going on 3 months now, 3.5 months, where he's been really fun to watch.
Here's the 0-1. In the air, left field, that one well struck, on its way, out of here. Dansby slugs and gets into one.
You know, the plays he's making, like his throwing accuracy has been awesome. Like the sliding kind of, that his trademark play, that little sliding play to the back end.
The 1-2, on the ground. Backhanded Swanson throws to first and gets Guerrero. Gold glove play right there.
It's been fun to watch. I think he's played a brilliant shortstop. And, you know, you see the gold gloves there. He's played gold glove shortstop.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel. Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
Yeah, Dansby Swanson. It's funny. I'm glad you pulled that, Sean Sears, producing the show. Because I'm reminded of, like, how David Ross felt about Dansby Swanson, really just in the first few weeks of getting to be the manager. And the way that he talked about it was just that feeling of relaxation, knowing, oh, yeah, that's an out. All right, that's an out. Oh, yeah, okay, good, yeah. Oh, good to know. All right, yeah, that's an out. And you heard it in the tone there from counsel of just talking about how the last 3 months he's just watching him play defense. Like, oh, boy, yeah, that's good. And that play that he makes so frequently, He's just really, really good defensively. Now, does he need to do more offensively? Yes, of course he does. He is hitting .285 over his last 38 games. .285 batting average. These days in MLB, .285, it'll play. Now, look, it's a lot of money for a guy who only has two homers in those 38 games. But it's not as bad as it looked in the first part of this year. That's for damn sure. I also can tell you that he was one of several players greatly affected by the loss of their dear friend and former hitting coach, Mike Brumley, the former Cub, who was a coach with the Braves for a long time. Austin Riley, another guy. Several players absolutely adored Mike Brumley, talked to him often. And Mike Brumley died in a car accident earlier this year. And it's just one of those things added in to the human level that might be going on with some people that you have noticed have struggled and have had difficult years. Austin Riley hurt, but even before that, not having a typical Austin Riley year. So something to keep in mind. There's often stuff that goes on behind the scenes. But Dansby Swanson was on Inside the Clubhouse yesterday with our Bruce Levine and David Haugh and talked about the mix of players that is now evident with this Cubs team and what happens to the veterans when the kids play well.
Everyone kind of goes at this game and growth at their own pace. And I would just say that we obviously have become better as they've gotten better, because it make the more amount of really good baseball players you have on a team, the better chance you are to be successful. And as this year has gone on, you know, seeing the growth from Miggy, not only at the plate, but just his presence, you know, at the catcher position, how he's grown as a pitch caller, game planner. Those things are really, really important. It's stuff that no one will ever see, stuff that, you know, people will probably never even recognize that he's gotten better at. And then you look at Pete and his ability, obviously, defensively and on the bases that that everyone can see, but the offensive adjustments that he's been able to make, the presence he's been able to bring into the batter's box. And then obviously Bushy's been good for us for pretty much the whole year, but just as consistent as they come, his defense at first base has gotten so much better. And I think for us I can't believe I'm saying this, but the older guys nowadays, the biggest thing we can do is just create an environment that they want to be in. And that, you know, we can constantly teach them, but also breathe like some life and belief into them. And I mean, that's how I look at it. I love being able to be available for them, whether it's on field stuff, whether it's mechanical stuff, whether it's off field stuff, whatever it may be that is going to help them grow, that I want to be a part of it. And, I just think that that's the right way to live. I think that's the right way to be. And that's, you know, what I feel like I was put on this earth to do.
Wow, that's beautiful stuff. Got spiritual there in the back half from Dansby Swanson, who's a very spiritual guy. Put on the earth to do. Boy, and I feel you, Dansby. I relate. All of a sudden you look around and you're like, oh my God, I'm the old guy. How did this happen? How did this happen? Wasn't it like last week that I was at a party at Dan Bernstein's apartment when he was engaged to his wife, his now wife, and we were pumping the keg on the back patio? It wasn't even the patio. It was like, it was basically like, you know, the glorified, the Chicago, you know what it is. It's the wooden back area where the staircase goes up and down. It might as well be a fire escape, but it's like the thing that gets way overcrowded whenever the party happens. There's people out there having smokes and, you know, chewing tobacco, and somebody might urinate off the edge if they really need to, and that's where the keg is. And, you know, when you get pissed off at somebody, you've been blown off by the girl you're trying to talk to on the inside, you go out there to blow off some steam. You know what I'm talking about. That's where me and Bernsey were hanging out, you know?
Oh, man, you said Bernstein's apartment. I was like, this might be a while back.
It's kind of a while back. It's a long time ago. We were talking about dreams and aspirations. And you look around, it's like, and now we're even older than Dansby Swanson. My God.
I mean, your son's producing, man. That's crazy.
He's learning a lot of algebra today.
That was good work by you.
It's a big day. Yeah, I showed him. You know what I used? This was awesome. What I used to show him some basic algebra, which actually he knew the concept of, was to project out the White Sox 31 wins in 131 games to see how many it would be in 162 games. We solved for X over 162. The answer is 38.6. So 39 games, just under 39 games. Ruben, you feel good about that? You feel good about the algebra lesson that took place?
I do.
Yeah, good. I think it's important that people hear your voice, because by next year's baseball season, I assume it will have changed.
Yeah, I'll start being like, hey, guys.
When you screen Ron from the South Side's call and Ben from Queens's call, it's going to be a very different thing.
Very much so.
Yeah, exactly. But so, look, that's one thing the White Sox season has been good for, is teaching algebra to 12-year-olds.
Yeah, it wasn't a total loss.
No, not at all. This is how many times they have won a game after trailing after seven innings. It's zero. And if you extrapolate that and solve for X by the end of the year, it will also be zero.
See, we're just making you smarter here, folks.
Seriously, it's like, I don't even know how that is done, that you don't have a single win when trailing after seven or eight or nine, and you lead the league in blown saves. I mean, come on. That's tough to do. That's really tough to do.
They're really pushing for it, man. I think they're going to do it. I think they're going to beat the record.
Yeah, I think they can do it. I think. Hey, man, 39 wins is what they're on pace for. That'll be an all-timer, and they'll be remembered appropriately. Miguel Amaya, by the way, as Dan B. Swanson was talking about, since July 30th, Miguel Amaya's OPS is 933. It's crazy. The no-stride thing that he's doing at the plate is paying massive, massive dividends. And, you know, I was talking to Nico Horner the other day about it in the clubhouse. And he's like, oh, he's going to be so good. So that's what Nico said about Miguel Amaya. Texters getting in. Yes, the landing. Thank you very much. It's the landing. That's what I'm looking for. The texters getting in on the Cubs. Here's one. When you talk about trades, Happ and Suzuki have no trade clauses. They're all set at third with Paredes and short with Swanson. As much as I wouldn't necessarily agree with it, Nico Horner or prospects or both could be packaged for a slugger. Bush or Shaw could move to second. You may give up some defense for more slug. That's Chuck in Round Lake. I understand your thought process, Chuck, but if it involves getting rid of Nico Horner and losing our Tuesday interview on the afternoon show, I do not approve.
I second that.
But maybe it's going to have to happen. Maybe I have to take content out of the calculus. Texture says, Spiegs, baseball's amazing. A game of millimeters. If the Cubs are able to squeak out four or five wins that they could and should have gotten during the, quote, dark time, unquote, everyone would be talking very, very differently. And yeah, no, that texture is absolutely correct. And we can all think of those games. We can all remember those games, whether they were an Adbert blown save early. Remember how many times he gave up home runs and blew saves? Whether they were a Hector Neris blown save along the way. Whatever it was, any number of times that, you know, soul crushing losses. You could make a top 10 of soul crushing losses. Hey, we could do that next week on our final show. That sounds fun, huh? Huh? You can make a top 10 for the Cubs, and in terms of soul-crushing losses for the White Sox, because those would have to be early, because the soul has been gone from those fans for a long, long time. 312-644-6767. This texter says, anybody asked what the slugging percentage is for Caleb Williams, since he seems to do everything else well? No, it hasn't come up, but I bet Caleb could both get a save for the White Sox and help them come back and get a win after trailing for seven. Texter speaks, Ruben is not 12, is he? Oh, yes, he is. Oh, yes, he is. That's why I let you hear the voice. Because next year, it should be a very different thing. Completely different entity. We will set you up for afternoon baseball. Take a look at the lineups and see what's coming up for both the Cubs and Sox. And you're going to hear a snippet of the PBP on one of the all-time great baseball voices. We'll do that next on 670 The Score.
We're back with more Hit and Run.
Are you crying? Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball. There's no crying in baseball!
On 670 The Score.
No crying!
Seats on the far, don't blame me, bring on the major league. Bring on the major league.
Forgive me for singing along, but I can't help it. It's Pavement and the Major Leagues. It's Spiegs and Hit and Run right here on 670 The Score. I do Hit and Run. I also do a podcast called the PBP. And Todd Callis, the son of Harry Callis, was on the PBP. And pretty cool for me to get a chance to talk to Todd. All these conversations are really good. By the way, taped one with Jason Benetti yesterday morning. At his hotel, here in Chicago.
Very cool.
That'll be the episode this coming week. And Benetti talking about life in Detroit, building a new broadcast. And yes, we did talk a little bit about the situation in Chicago as well. So, but anyway, this week you can find us on at the podcast hub of your choice or on the Odyssey app, the PBP Voices of Baseball. Had a chance to ask Todd about his dad, Harry Callis, Michael Jack Schmidt, number 500, one of the formative baseball voices of my youth and a lot of other people's. Let's back up. I was a kid growing up in Jersey listening to 1210 WCIU, and I didn't know your dad was a smoker, but I heard it. You know what I mean? Like, eventually I figured it out. What kind of cigarettes were they? And were you a kid in that booth smelling those cigarettes and feeling that atmosphere in the broadcast booth?
I think way back in the day, he was starting with Cools, and then I think he switched to Parliaments, Parliament Menthols. But yeah, not only did he smoke cigarettes, but on Sunday afternoons, he would smoke cigars. And he and Richie Ashburn would smoke cigars, and Chris Wheeler hated cigars. So they would always intentionally make sure the wafting of their cigars was going over towards Wheels. So back in the KYW and WCAU days, Dad's cut his teeth with the Phillies from 1971 until the day he died. So he had an incredible run there with the Phillies. But yeah, he was always a smoker, probably cut his life a little shorter, but I don't think he ever would have traded it off for living another 5 years if he had to give up smoking, because that was he was a smoker from the day I was born, and he loved it.
I hate to think about the years that he missed, but my goodness, what a full life and career, obviously. But like, I'm one of millions of baseball fans whose sensibilities for broadcasting and for the game itself were informed by his pacing and his phrasing and his delight in certain moments. And I didn't even like that team. I didn't even like the Phillies, but man, I liked listening to him. So what a powerful thing. Has your relationship to his style, like, did you love it? Did you then hate it and try to push against it? And I've talked to Joe Buck, who's a friend and has been on the pod, you know? So I wonder if you tried to do it and then pulled away and then came back to it, if that's been a figure in your life as you've built your own brand as a broadcaster.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some nuances that are a part of my broadcasting style that are just ingrained in my head because I heard his broadcast every day of my life. So there's going to be certain intonations and certain pacing that you hear from Dad's calls that will also carry over to my calls. I feel like more than anybody, he let the game breathe. And even if he was on the radio, there would be a pitch or two where all you would hear was the guy selling hot dogs or Cracker Jacks in the stands, or the fans just background murmur. You wouldn't really hear anything. So he let the game breathe. And every once in a while, especially on TV, I'll catch myself, well, just, you know, you don't have to really fill up space here. There's visuals. You can let the game breathe a little more. So I try to do that. So that's definitely a tip of the cap to Dad's pacing through the years. But I've always tried to avoid any of his catchphrases or his home run calls. So kind of do my own thing. And that's kind of evolved since I've been here with Houston, which has changed through the years with the different teams. But yeah, I've there's definitely an impact and an influence that I think you hear in my cadence a little bit from Dad's style, just because it was something that I was basically weaned on.
Don't you think that ball's out of here? That informed catchphrases still, and even just stylistic. Like, does Gary Cohen pay rent? Does he send a check every once in a while?
I think Dwayne Kuiper has a similar call for the Giants. So, yeah, those two guys kind of both attach that out of here call to their call.
Deals. And Bonds hits one high. Hits it deep. It is out of here. 756.
Alonso drives one deep left field, really going back. It's out of here, and the Mets win it.
And it's different than Dad's call, but yeah, I mean, there's only a finite amount of ways you can call a home run. So it's whenever I hear Kipe or Gary, who was a friend from my first year with the New York Mets, call a home run, I definitely think of Dad's call.
Could it be? Could it be? It is out of here.
Isn't that cool? That's a snippet of the PBP. Loved the whole conversation. There's more about Harry, more about Todd, some good stuff about the Astros and the tainted dynasty that is, and Jose Altuve that's in there as well. The podcast is called The PBP, Voices of Baseball. Anyway, coming up later today, it is Jonathan Cannon and the White Sox against the Detroit Tigers. Cannon has pitched at least six innings in, let's see, one, two, three, four, five, six, seven of his last eight starts. It's pretty awesome. Good for him. Cannon against the Tigers. I could give you that White Sox lineup. Is there anybody listening right now who's dying for the White Sox lineup, who's like sitting there with their scorecard getting ready? All right, for you, Nicky Lopez, Corey Jolks, Andrew Benintendi, Andrew Vaughn, Gavin Sheets, Lenin Sosa, Dominic Fletcher in center field, Miguel Vargas now in the 8-hole at third base, and Chucky Robinson is your catcher in the 9-hole. No Luis Robert. So if you were going to the game hoping to see Luis Robert on a Sunday, who has six hits in his last three games, he's got nine hits in his last five games or something like that. Either way, he's not in your lineup today, so enjoy yourself. As
go and enjoy yourself. He's not there.
Go ahead. Go enjoy that. The team. I don't mean to laugh at them. It's just that they're 31-99. It's just that they're 41 and a half games out of the wild card. 41 and a half of the wild card. Their wins project to what? How many wins are they going to get?
39.
38.6. They got to pick up 0.4 of a win somewhere. I don't know.
And that's just like with averages. They might not even do that.
I don't think they can get 0.4 of a win. I don't think it's possible. All right, thank you very much. The Cubs are in Miami going for the sweep. You'll hear Mike Esposito doing pregame in a matter of moments. That's pretty cool. Espo in for Zach, who is in for Pat. So it's Espo, and then it's Zach and Coom down there in Miami, and that's pretty cool. Cubs lineup, Javier Assad is pitching for the Cubs with that 3.11 ERA. Adam Oller is pitching for the Marlins. And if you knew that Adam Oller's first name was Adam, man, you should be hosting this show. Because if you heard me filling time, that's because I was clicking on Oller's link so I could find out that his first name was Adam. Robbie Triano, don't look at me like you knew Adam Oller's name was Adam. You didn't know that.
Mike Esposito getting ready to do pregame is in queue right now. He literally said, as you said his name, tell me everything you know about him.
I know that he's 0-1 with a 9.64 ERA. Okay? I know that Adam Oller, he's 6'4", 225. He's 29 years old. Went to Northwestern State. He was in the 20th round, a 20th round pick of the Pirates in 2016. Boy, that means he's got to be good. Ian Happ will lead off against Adam Oller.
I love these deep dives on Adam Oller.
Well, you know, this is the show for you. Happ, Bush, Suzuki on fire. Cody Bellinger. It's cleanup and plays right field. You don't have to watch Seiya out there in right field today. Nico Hoerner in the 5-hole. He has moved up. Swanson is in the 6-hole, batting and playing shortstop. Pete Crow Armstrong hits 7th in center field. Patrick Wisdom hits 8th. He's in for Isak Paredes. And Christian Bethencourt is the catcher today for the Cubs, going against the Miami Marlins, who are an absolute sham of a Major League Baseball team. Just an absolute crime of a baseball team. Pre-game coverage for that game begins at 12:05. First pitch is at 12:40 right here on the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network, coming up in just a little bit. Seriously, that is a team subsisting on revenue sharing. The Marlins get their chunk of revenue sharing, and that's all they get. That's all they get. And they don't care that nobody comes to their field. They don't care that they have a payroll where they don't really pay anybody a commensurate MLB wage. They don't care that they trade away the likes of Jazz Chisholm as soon as they become mildly, potentially expensive. And people just toil in obscurity and anonymity down there. And Skip Schumacher is dying to leave. I don't think he'll come to the White Sox, but he is indeed dying to leave. Thank you so much to the guests on today's show. Ryan McGuffey, who hosts the White Sox Talk podcast for NBC Sports Chicago. Sahadev Sharma, the Cubs beat writer for The Athletic. thank you so much to all the callers and the texters and the listeners for being who you are, being a part of the show. And thanks for teaching the associate producer algebra. He's going to kill it. Absolutely going to kill it.
First day of school, man.
First day of school is tomorrow. Thank you so much to Sean Sears. He does a great job every week. Thank you to Robbie Triano for your emotional and psychological support from the back of the room during these difficult times. Mike Esposito as your Cubs pregame coming up next. Me, I'm back tomorrow on the Score Afternoon Show with Anthony Herron the next couple of days on Monday and Tuesday. Wednesday, it's me and Mark Grody. Caleb Williams is on the show on Wednesday with me and Mark Grody. We'll ask him if he can save the White Sox. Thanks so much for listening to Hit and Run. This has been me, Spiegs, on 670 The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
We're back with more Hit and Run.
Are you crying? Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball. There's no crying in baseball.
On 670 The Score.
No crying.
Seats on the far, don't blame me. Bring on the major league. Bring on the major league.
Forgive me for singing along, but I can't help it. It's Pavement and the Major Leagues. It's Spiegs and Hit and Run right here on 670 The Score. I do Hit and Run. I also do a podcast called The PBP. And Todd Callis, the son of Harry Callis, was on the PBP. And pretty cool for me to get a chance to talk to Todd. All these conversations are really good. By the way, taped one with Jason Benetti yesterday morning at his hotel here in Chicago.
Very cool.
That'll be the episode this coming week. And Benetti talking about life in Detroit, building a new broadcast. And yes, we did talk a little bit about the situation in Chicago as well. So, but anyway, this week you can find us on at the podcast hub of your choice or on the Odyssey app, the PBP Voices of Baseball. Had a chance to ask Todd about his dad, Harry Callis, Michael Jack Schmidt, number 500, one of the formative baseball voices of my youth and a lot of other people's. Let's back up. I was a kid growing up in Jersey listening to 1210 WCIU, and I didn't know your dad was a smoker, but I heard it. You know what I mean? Like, eventually I figured it out. What kind of cigarettes were they? And were you a kid in that booth smelling those cigarettes and feeling that atmosphere in the broadcast booth?
I think way back in the day, he was starting with Cools, and then I think he switched to Parliaments, Parliament Menthols. But yeah, not only did he smoke cigarettes, but on Sunday afternoons, he would smoke cigars. And he and Richie Ashburn would smoke cigars, and Chris Wheeler hated cigars. So they would always intentionally make sure the wafting of their cigars was going over towards Wheels. So, back in the KYW and WCAU days, Dad's cut his teeth with the Phillies from 1971 until the day he died. So he had an incredible run there with the Phillies. But yeah, he was always a smoker, probably cut his life a little shorter, but I don't think he ever would have traded it off for living another 5 years if he had to give up smoking, because that was he was a smoker from the day I was born, and he loved it.
I hate to think about the years that he missed, but my goodness, what a full life and career, obviously. But like, I'm one of millions of baseball fans whose sensibilities for broadcasting and for the game itself were informed by his pacing and his phrasing and his delight in certain moments. And I didn't even like that team. I didn't even like the Phillies, but man, I liked listening to him. So what a powerful thing. Has your relationship to his style, like, did you love it? Did you then hate it and try to push against it? And I've talked to Joe Buck, who's a friend and has been on the pod, you know, so I wonder if you tried to do it and then pulled away and then came back to it, if that's been a figure in your life as you've built your own brand as a broadcaster.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some nuances that are a part of my broadcasting style that are just ingrained in my head because I heard his broadcast every day of my life. So there's going to be certain intonations and certain pacing that you hear from Dad's calls that will also carry over to my calls. I feel like more than anybody, he let the game breathe. And even if he was on the radio, there would be a pitch or two where all you would hear was the guy selling hot dogs or Cracker Jacks in the stands or the fans just background murmur. You wouldn't really hear anything. So he let the game breathe. And every once in a while, especially on TV, I'll catch myself, well, just, you know, you don't have to really fill up space here. There's visuals. You can let the game breathe a little more. So I try to do that. So that's definitely a tip of the cap to Dad's pacing through the years. But I've always tried to avoid any of his catchphrases or his home run calls. So kind of do my own thing. And that's kind of evolved since I've been here with Houston, which has changed through the years with the different teams. But yeah, there's definitely an impact and an influence that I think you hear in my cadence a little bit from Dad's style, just because it was something that I was basically weaned on.
Don't you think that ball's out of here? That informed catchphrases still, and even just stylistic. Like, does Gary Cohen pay rent? Does he send a check every once in a while?
I think Dwayne Kuiper has a similar call for the Giants. So yeah, those two guys kind of both attach that out of here call to their call.
Deals. And Bonds hits one high. Hits it deep. It is out of here. 7:56.
Alonso drives one. Deep left field. Really going back. It's out of here. And the Mets win it.
And yeah, it's different than Dad's call. But yeah, I mean, there's only a finite amount of ways you can call a home run. So it's whenever I hear Kipe or Gary, who was a friend from my first year with the New York Mets, call a home run, I definitely think of Dad's call.
Could it be? Could it be? It is out of here! Number 400 for Jim Thome!
Isn't that cool? That's a snippet of the PBP. Loved the whole conversation. There's more about Harry, more about Todd, some good stuff about the Astros and the tainted dynasty that is, and Jose Altuve that's in there as well. The podcast is called The PBP, Voices of Baseball. Anyway, coming up later today, it is Jonathan Cannon and the White Sox against the Detroit Tigers. Cannon has pitched at least six innings in, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of his last 8 starts. It's pretty awesome. Good for him. Cannon against the Tigers. I could give you that White Sox lineup. Is there anybody listening right now who's dying for the White Sox lineup, who's like sitting there with their scorecard getting ready? All right, for you, Nicky Lopez, Corey Jolks, Andrew Benintendi, Andrew Vaughn, Gavin Sheets, Lenin Sosa, Dominic Fletcher in center field, Miguel Vargas now in the 8-hole at third base, and Chucky Robinson is your catcher in the 9-hole. No Luis Robert. So if you were going to the game hoping to see Luis Robert on a Sunday, who has 6 hits in his last 3 games, he's got 9 hits in his last 5 games or something like that. But either way, he's not in your lineup today, so enjoy yourself.
Go and enjoy yourself. He's not there.
Go ahead. Go enjoy that. the team. I don't mean to laugh at them. It's just that they're 31-99. It's just that they're 41 and a half games out of the wild card. 41 and a half of the wild card. Their wins project to what? How many wins are they going to get?
39.
38.6. They got to pick up 0.4 of a win somewhere. I don't know.
And that's just like with averages. They might not even do that.
I don't think they can get 0.4 of a win. I don't think it's possible. All right, thank you very much. The Cubs are in Miami going for the sweep. You'll hear Mike Esposito doing pregame in a matter of moments. That's pretty cool. Espo in for Zach, who is in for Pat. So it's Espo, and then it's Zach and Coom down there in Miami, and that's pretty cool. Cubs lineup. Javier Assad is pitching for the Cubs with that 3.11 ERA. Adam Oller is pitching for the Marlins. And if you knew that Adam Oller's first name was Adam, man, you should be hosting this show. Because if you heard me filling time, that's because I was clicking on Oller's link so I could find out that his first name was Adam. Robbie Triano, don't look at me like you knew Adam Oller's name was Adam. You didn't know that.
Mike Esposito, getting ready to do pregame, is in queue right now. He literally said, as you said his name, tell me everything you know about him.
I know that he's 0-1 with a 9.64 ERA. Okay? I know that Adam Oller, he's 6'4", 225. He's 29 years old. Went to Northwestern State. He was in the 20th round, a 20th round pick of the Pirates in 2016. Boy, that means he's got to be good. Ian Happ will lead off against Adam Oller.
Whose I love name, these deep dives on Adam Oller.
Well, you know, this is the show for you. Happ, Bush, Suzuki on fire. Cody Bellinger. It's cleanup and plays right field. You don't have to watch Seiya out there in right field today. Nico Hoerner in the 5-hole. He has moved up. Swanson is in the 6-hole, batting and playing shortstop. Pete Crow Armstrong hits 7th in center field. Patrick Wisdom hits 8th. He's in for Isak Paredes. And Christian Bethencourt is the catcher today for the Cubs, going against the Miami Marlins, who are an absolute sham of a Major League Baseball team. Just an absolute crime of a baseball team. Pre-game coverage for that game begins at 12:05. First pitch is at 12:40 right here on the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network, coming up in just a little bit. Seriously, that is a team subsisting on revenue sharing. The Marlins get their chunk of revenue sharing, and that's all they get. That's all they get. And they don't care that nobody comes to their field. They don't care that they have a payroll where they don't really pay anybody a commensurate MLB wage. They don't care that they trade away the likes of Jazz Chisholm as soon as they become mildly, potentially expensive. And people just toil in obscurity and anonymity down there. And Skip Schumacher is dying to leave. I don't think he'll come to the White Sox, but he is indeed dying to leave. Thank you so much to the guests on today's show. Ryan McGuffey, who hosts the White Sox Talk podcast for NBC Sports Chicago. Sahadev Sharma, the Cubs beat writer for The Athletic. Thank you so much to all the callers and the texters and the listeners for being who you are, being a part of the show. And thanks for teaching the associate producer algebra. He's going to kill it. Absolutely going to kill it.
First day of school, man.
First day of school is tomorrow. Thank you so much to Sean Sears. He does a great job every week. Thank you to Robbie Triano for your emotional and psychological support from the back of the room during these difficult times. Mike Esposito as your Cubs pregame coming up next. Me, I'm back tomorrow on the Score Afternoon Show with Anthony Herron the next couple of days on Monday and Tuesday. Wednesday, it's me and Mark Grody. Caleb Williams is on the show on Wednesday with me and Mark Grody. We'll ask him if he can save the White Sox. Thanks so much for listening to Hit and Run. This has been me, Spiegs, on 670 The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.